Welcome to the Sports and Comedy Attack featuring Mike Diesel. Today's broadcast was broadcast on June the 8th, 2023. And our guest is Dobie Maxwell, stand-up comic. Here goes Mike.
I'll introduce one of my favorite. Hey, bud. How are you?
The Big Daddy is here. How you guys doing?
Oh, there he is. There he is. Oh, he's got his Brewers cap on. He's ready for the ball game.
We're talking sports. Is that correct? I thought it's
well, okay. That's what I was going to do real quick up front, if
recording
you don't mind.
In progress.
Everybody, John Case, yeah. This is Dobie Maxwell.
Hi, Dobie. How you doing?
He's a terrific guy, but he's a great guy, but he's a brilliant comedian. I love the guy. Everybody's got their, you know, but I love it. But here's the thing. This is on enlightenradio.org. We are called the Sports and Comedy Attack. So what I wanted to do this segment real quick is mention, I don't know if John has heard of it, I don't know if Dobie has heard of this, Elijah Godwin. Do you know who Elijah Godwin is? He's potentially one of the fastest human beings on the planet.
Okay.
And he was at the University of Georgia training for the Olympics coming up, and he was doing very well. He was done his workouts and he was hitting his numbers, and he went back to the bench just to kind of sit down and relax a little. Someone put a pole vault jab sticking out of the bench. When he sat down, it went right through his shoulder and right through his back and pierced his lung.
Oh, man.
And it was scary as hell.
Stabbed.
He's laying there, asking his trainer, "Am I going to die? Am I going to die?" He's freaked out. So they bring the guys over. The EMTs are so smart. They cut the thing in half, so there's just a little stub. So the doctor only has to deal with that little stub. And they're praying that. And thank God it didn't hit an artery or anything. But that kid, he could barely walk. He got out. He's going into rehab. You know, his mother was there. She's a deeply religious woman. Just an amazing story. The kids come all the way back and beat his previous speeds. So wow. God bless him. Sometimes really good things can happen in sports to good people. So my water is I'm tipping the cap to you, buddy. Keep up the great work, Elijah Godwin. You're the best. I'll be cheering for you in the Olympics, bro.
I like him just for his name. That's a great name, Elijah.
That's a great name. It
sounds like a wrestler. I thought it was
a wrestler or a sprinter. It just sounds like a football player. It's just a great name.
A sprinting
name.
Wrestler.
Okay, well, we're going to get right down to it. Welcome, everyone. John Case is our original dusty-footed philosopher. He has started this whole thing. He runs this whole thing. Without him, none of this goes, because I'm a freaking idiot when it comes to programming stuff on the internet. I used to be okay at it. Now I just suck. I'm just old and pathetic. But I'm so happy. I want to introduce a man who's I don't know if he's originally from Chicago, but I know Chicago is his love and home, and he's near Milwaukee, I think. And Dobie Maxwell is here. Dobie, thank you so much for showing up.
Mike Diesel, one of my
appreciate it, bro.
Sorry to step on you. One of my favorite people, buddy. We haven't talked in a while. It's great to be back. Actually, I'm from Milwaukee, born and raised. Chicago is 90 miles away. I moved there. Right now, I'm right in between. So it's funny because as a kid, the Brewers were in the American League, and I cheered for the Cubs because in their National League. And the Brewers went to the National League, and now I cheer for both. And you can't do that.
You have
I can do whatever I want.
Yeah, I know what you're going because I was cheering for the Orioles for years.
Yeah,
big sure. We didn't have a team. Mm-hmm. You know, I grew up 30 miles south of D.C. We didn't,
right.
You know, in Woodbridge, Virginia. We didn't have our team left. So I became an Orioles fan. My wife is an Orioles fan. And then all of a sudden, this upstart team starts at RFK Stadium. And I'm watching this kid that just come up named Ryan Zimmerman. Mm-hmm. And I'm watching this guy and I'm like, wow, this guy is. If you take Ryan Zimmerman's face and you just put it on any genre of baseball for the past three, you would just look at him and go, baseball player.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sure. That's just how he's built. He played great for UVA. He kept his career here. He stayed with the Nationals. He's a great team leader. He had some injuries. Even when he was injured, he was a team leader. My Nationals aren't doing so good now because the Learners, their ownership is really having a lot of problems financially because they're into commercial real estate, and we know how that went during COVID.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're hoping that they get a deal going where we can actually maybe buy Juan Soto back.
Well, I remember when they drafted Strasburg. That was kind of a cool thing. I mean, he was just the wunderkind.
So sad. Yeah. It's so sad, man. That surgery freaking destroyed him, man. He's not coming back. He's going to retire.
I think he was supposed to get Tommy John. He got Elton John surgery.
Well, yeah. And, all right. Well, let me just ask you, before we get to the really funny, and I know you're quick with that, when did it start for you? When did you say, you know, I think this might be for me?
Sports.
Yeah.
Well,
I'm talking about comedy. I'm talking about stand-up.
Oh, man. You know what? I was in third grade, and Milwaukee in Wisconsin's got a lot of German people. You're not German, are you?
No. Well, part. Croft. Well,
the funny Croft. Part.
Yeah, Croft.
Because Germans.
My mom's mother was German.
Well, the thing I'm trying, again, I'm going to get German people angry in that Wisconsin is full of them. They can fix your engine. They can cook a good Stollen. Germans are not funny. You're never going to see Klaus's comedy bunker in Stuttgart. You're never going to see that. And my third grade teacher, Mrs. Muckerhide, her name was Agnes Muckerhide. And when you say Agnes Muckerhide, your face scrunches up like you had about 3 pounds of bad sauerkraut. And she'd shake her fist at me and said, all you do is tell jokes in my class, you little shysa, which that's what she calls shysa.
Oh, you little shysa.
You think you're going to grow up to find a job where you tell jokes for a living? And I didn't know that was a possibility. So thank you, Mrs. Muckerhide. I traveled the country.
Thank you for the inspiration.
And you wanted me to mop floors and drive trucks. But it's a kind of a thing. That's where I started, probably about 9 or 10 years old. I watched a show, I'm sure you did too, called The Hollywood Squares. Remember that show?
Oh, hell yeah.
Paul Lynn for the block and Wally Cox and Rosemary and all those kind of people. Well, they would have the smart answer, you know what I'm saying? And then the funny answer. Well, I would do that in school. The teachers would ask the questions. I'd raise my hand and I would hit. I found out years later that there were writers that wrote those lines for the people on Hollywood Squares. I was doing it myself.
Right. And you were writing. You were the writer. You were
and
the
teacher's like, you know the answers. You're a smart kid, but you have to. I was addicted to that laughter. I'm sure you were too. You're a naturally funny guy.
Well, no, I wasn't, oddly enough, I was so uncomfortable in my own skin until I kind of developed into high school. I was just an uncomfortable kid. Now, I was physical, and I played a lot of sports. I played baseball, basketball, football, boxed, wrestled, did all that stuff. And I feel like that was great. And I could kind of fit in, you know, like that. But I still didn't fit into any like jock or freak category. I was friends with everyone.
Me too.
And I was friends with like the class clown. And I would kind of write and encourage the class clown.
Very good.
Because then the teacher would go, Mike, don't say another word to him. Because she knew Mrs. Clark. We had Clark and Peterson. It was a team of English teachers. And Mrs. Clark would mess with me for talking to my buddy Mike Mock. And I'd write something down and go, here, Mike, say this. And he'd say it. Mike would just say he didn't care.
Did you get a writer's credit when he was in detention?
No, nothing. I got nothing.
That's funny. That's hilarious.
I got when you work for Hef too long. Nothing.
There's an inside reference. I hope viewers know who that guy is.
I'm messing. It's a guy we both know. Good guy.
All joke. He's actually.
Good. I don't even really. I'm not even on the road anymore, man. I don't even work.
You know, I don't either. And it got to the point where COVID kind of shut it down, and I got a day job. And you talk about appreciating comedy. Oh, my God. I got fired for saying something in my day job that I would have gotten applause for on stage. You know, and I worked at a place called Quick Trip, which is a convenience store chain. One of the best places to work, allegedly, you know, all the magazines and all those things. And they have 700 stores in Wisconsin, Minnesota, and Iowa. The same goofs that come in every day. So it's a one-on-one comedy show. People are like, God, you're really funny. You should try comedy. It's like, well, until the pando, I was doing comedy, but I didn't let it. They're sweet people. The people I work with, I love them. But about 30% of the same people come in every day.
Right.
And it's woodwork squeaks, out come the freaks. And it's like loser bingo. Who's going to hit your lane? And this guy's a huge dude, and it's like there's nothing wrong. But I nicknamed him Grumpy. And he just was grumpy. He came in 500 times, was not nice to anybody. And an older lady was asking some help for her lottery tickets, and I helped her out, trying to be friendly. And again, I was supposed to go first, and you skipped, and you do your job. And it was 7.5 hours into an 8-hour rough day, and I said, "Drink a Diet Coke, you walrus! Get out of my store. My dad owns this place." And I just got on him, you know, like a heckler. And buddy, I wish my audio, my audition tape would be as clean as the video from the store that saw me. They ran that at the Christmas party about 16 times. And I gave them some gestures. Yeah, they said they called me double finger dope because I gave them the whole deal. I didn't back down. And everybody on the way out, they said, you just did what we've all wanted to do. But I showed up early. I stayed late. I took extra shifts. And my manager was a Marine, ex-Marine. He goes, dude, I love you. He goes, corporate's going to let you go. And I said, well, it is what it is, but I'm going out with my head held high because you're so much your self-esteem and dignity. Buddy, you've been Second Show Friday and some, I don't know what kind of language I can use on the podcast.
Or when I started, or Dobie's, or when I started Third Show Saturday.
Oh, buddy. Yeah.
11:30.
Yeah.
11:30, it starts.
But see, I got to tell you, though, for those who haven't seen Mike work, your style, I love your style because it's take no prisoners, man. And it's alive. You'll be great on TV, but your live style, I love watching you work because you take what I do to the 10th power. It's like, don't mess with Big Daddy Diesel when he's on stage. And
nobody's calling me that anymore. I'm going by Cucurini. I'm going by my given name. I'm going by Cucurini.
That's a great name, too.
Cucurini.
You know, I mean, Stone Cold Steve Austin. He's Israel name is Steve Williams. So
Cucurini's a great name.
And a Scrabble would be about 73 points.
Don't put a hole in your ass and walk dead, sumbitch, dry. Yeah, that guy. I got to the point where I was not doing the kind of gigs that were productive for me mentally.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was still kind of clinging on. And when you go through the situation, when I started, I was just a single guy.
Sure.
You know, and I got hurt really bad in like two relationships that just kind of shit canned me on relationships altogether. I'm like, this is bullshit. It's too conventional. It doesn't work for me. I'm just going to. And I was very straight up with any lady that would be kind enough to it be in my presence. I was like, okay, this is great. We'll go out and have a good time. And I said, look, I'm not relationship material. I'm not very good. And I would tell. And then I met this beautiful woman at a comedy. Well, it was a bar, but it was a one nighter somebody was booking. And unfortunately, at the time, she was married to somebody else, but that didn't stop me from giving her a big old hug after the show. I basically picked her up in the air and her husband's standing right next to her, right?
Okay.
That beautiful lady went on to become my wife.
Awesome. That's fantastic.
So that's comedy. I can say whatever the hell I want to say negatively about comedy and myself and how I didn't handle certain things well, and I'll own that for the rest of my life. I handled some things pretty well, but that situation, just being able to meet her and being blessed with being with her for 25 years has been freaking amazing, man. It's been amazing.
You know, it's like sports. I think comedy and sports have a lot in common in that there's travel involved and the whole deal. And a lot of athletes that I've and you met too, they get out there and they might get drafted by a team. And I had a tryout with the Kansas City Royals as a left-handed pitcher. I didn't make it, but I had a tryout in my whole life in high school.
That's fantastic.
But even to get to that point was a lot. And same thing, you know, you'd go to open mics as a comic, or even you get a couple of paid gigs and you're regional. I mean, the higher you go in anything like that that's organized, competitive, is difficult.
Oh, man.
And anybody that has pitched one or taken one at bat in the major leagues or one shift in hockey or played one down in the NFL, I have so much respect for them. And everybody's got a story. And I think there will be a great podcast or a book about guys that didn't make it. You know, had all the thing and it's just historic. Like I said, they met a nice woman, a million stories.
I was set. I signed the paperwork to move into a two-bedroom apartment in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
I was ready to move in with three other guys and just hang in New York and do my thing from there. And then I met her and I told her what I thought I was going to do. And 3 months later, I moved in with her.
Beautiful. Well, let me ask you this, Mike, because I think I'm assuming a lot of comics watch this or athletes. I'm not sure.
Well, I don't know who the hell's watching this. I don't know. It's like they're listening. They're not watching because John's not doing the video.
Okay, even listening. Yeah. What drove you to be a comic? And I'm asking this because I didn't know until many years into it. And it shocked me when I found out.
I feel like I'm going to tell you a little story to build up to that.
Good.
My father never, when I was a kid, thought anything was funny. He was a cop. He was a basically a narcotics investigator.
Okay.
And the joke I do in my act is, if he had any idea how much marijuana was being grown in his own basement, he probably would have reevaluated his career choices. but the point being is, you know, my brothers and I were tough guys. I mean, my brothers would beat the shit out of each other. And man, I mean, it was very physical growing up between us. And my dad was a little bit physical with us at that time, because look, man, he's a guy that's going out there and seeing man's inhumanity to man.
I get it, bro.
Day, you know, and that didn't dawn on me. But I will tell you this. When I turned 16, we were all at the dinner table, including my older brother, which we lost last year. God rest his soul. I miss him tremendously. He was a great athlete. He was a sports guy. He was a retired cop. He had 9 kids, for God's sakes.
Wow.
I don't even know how many grandkids he has. Nobody does. yeah, he's just a terrific dude, man. Just for me, he was a good friend and to bullshit with. He was great. So we're sitting at the table, and I sit like here. My brother Tom, who's really skinny, sits here. My dad's at the head of the table. My brother Dan, who I mentioned, is straight across from Tom. My sister is straight across from me, and my little brother's right next to my mom. And that's how the seating arrangement was. And you sit down, you eat your dinner, you don't talk much. You sit, talk about your day, and how, if you're asked to talk about your day, you talk about your day. If you're not, shut up. Don't piss off the old man. That's the thing. Just don't. That guy that's at the head of the table, shut your mouth. If he asks you a question, try to respond and don't be an asshole. So we're just kind of politely eating, and I can't remember exactly what it was, but I think I dropped my knife and picked it up, and my brother Dan went, Jesus Christ, why are you such a freaking slob? You just drop everything. You're clumsy. I'm not handing you shit. Nothing. My dad's like, looking at Dan like, well, that's an odd thing, Dan. You know, just kind of starting to get a little pissed off. And I just looked at my brother, because my mom always called my brother Dan Moonface.
Okay.
So I said, well, at least when I was born, the doctor knew which end to smack. And my dad went like this. I swear to God, first time in my life, it was the best feeling ever, Dobie. Because he went like this. You. He just put his head down. And I went, I win. I win. I did it. And all my siblings were like, Finally, even my brother Dan was like, great joke, bro. Great joke. Excellent. You know, it was just one of those times where, you know, that kind of, and then all of a sudden I was the funny kid in the family.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I always have something funny to say. And you know how it is, man. But then I started to kind of feel really uncomfortable around like dinner situations. If we'd have like a small party and some people over, oh, I can't wait to meet your husband. He's so funny. And my wife's like, well, he's not on tonight. So
yeah, sure.
There's a meal in front of you to eat, and there's generally, and then we'll tell your husband to do his thing. Do your little routine thing you do. And I'm like, I said, pay me $1,000. And I'll
like, right.
You sure. Know, no, that's, you know, and the thing is I actually got to the point, I told myself, if I get to the point where I can borrow money from a bank or an institution, and I write down the entertainer or stand-up comic, I've made it.
Sure.
And I did that. I did that.
You did.
More than one time over.
Yeah.
So, but I'm just not, I had Larry Nichols on here, Larry XL. You know who he is, Larry?
I do, yes.
Good friend of mine, great guy. Oh, Christ, when he came in to Wiseacres to do open mic, I went like this, Toby. I swear to Christ, I went like this.
Yeah, wow.
Hi, how are you? I'm Mike. Hi, how are you? He's like, hey, name's Larry XL. And I was like, of course it is. And he goes, I'm going to do some time. And I said, of course you are.
Yes, sir.
Because I wasn't good. So I was like, when do you want to go on? He's like, you know, he came in and he just developed this. Because he's like a metalhead. He's a rock and roll guy, man. He's a different kind of animal, and he's just hilarious. He's really very dry.
I think he would be, yes.
And he's very laid back. He's one of those big gentle giants, you know. Mm-hmm. He's just really laid back, just a sweet guy. And we had a nice interview, but I gotta tell you, Oh yeah. We were my wife is editing on the fly. She's like, let Dobie say something. My wife just popped her head in.
Oh, hello, lovely Mrs.
Patience, wait.
Okay.
That's her name. Okay. Patience, wait.
That's a wonderful great name.
Well, she's the only one in the country. So, but Larry told me something sad. He said that there's no more real camaraderie between the older comics and the younger ones. Like we had, I mean,
I agree with that.
We had some good camaraderie back in the day. We cared about each other. I mean, professionally and personally.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, I'm sure when you came up too, it's any bigger city that's got any kind of a scene. You go to the diner after the show. You talk about your show. The older guys say, hey, kid, try this. Try who's a tag for you, blah, blah, blah. That's how you learn. And you also learn on the road trips when some headliner would talk to you. Hey, kid, you want to get in the car? So 3, 4, 5 hours. That's how you learn your craft. I just love that so much. And now everybody's buried their head in the phone. And it's like, I'm not trying to say you kids get off my lawn, but there is a craft involved. And your mentors, you can name me 5 mentors in your career. And I that weren't famous. But, oh, my God, I love them. They're saints in my life.
Well, my first one was probably Mark Matusoff.
I love Matusoff.
Who became my friend is just – he helped me so much in the beginning develop. Because I really was just – I thought the louder the joke was, the funnier it was.
Mm-hmm.
And that's – you and I both know that's not the case. So,
well, one thing about Matusoff, and I thought you guys made such a great team, and you weren't a comedy team, but, I mean, you're kind of associated with each other. You won one of the greatest clubs in America, and I love absolutely
sir.
Working. No, thank you, sir, because you booked me, and it was fantastic on so many levels. But I just thought it's a you know, high power, low power. You were the perfect team, and you're both great guys, both very funny, and I have no reason to say that because other than it's true.
Right, so I appreciate it, Dobie.
But Matusoff he's wonderful.
Well, we had him on. He's the sweetest guy. Mm-hmm. He's still the same guy. He's just a sweetheart, man. He's just
plays a mandolin. How many people you know in life, much less comedy, play a mandolin?
And he just kept getting better. He kept. Yeah. I'll tell you how many times I worked with him. I almost was able to sing in Romanian. He does that song in Romanian, and I'm going right. And about 10 minutes in, I'm like, "Wait a minute! I know the song. Shit!
Yeah.
I can speak a foreign language."
That's classic. So,
but he did such good work. But he is really, really a good writer. He's a great writer. You
awesome.
Know,
just, I bought his book and I just haven't gotten to it yet, but I promised him I would.
Oh, man. He's a good, good writer, man. I've read some of his stuff and I'm just like, this is amazing. You know, this is.
He's really, a Mets fan, too. Did you know that? I know you knew that.
What's that?
He's a Mets fan.
Oh, I know.
It's cool.
Well, we have to agree to disagree during baseball season. That's all. Just, you know, I mean, DeGrom, did you see what happened?
Seconds. Yeah. He's hurting.
Shut UCL surgery. On his elbow.
Brutal.
It's the same.
I think it's bad for the sport because he's such a good guy and a great talent. Generational talent.
He is.
Yeah.
And Texans, the Texas team could have really used him to stay in the lineup, you know, kind of not put him out there in the salad rotation, but every other time.
Well, you're a smart sports fan, and I try to be as well. It's like, I want my teams to win, yes. But I want to have the best competition. I don't want the rival to have injuries.
Right.
I want to beat your team with your best lineup, our best lineup. And if you win, I'll shake your hand, buy you a cold drink. Hey, man, you guys won this year. But I want a guy like that out there just from a sports point of view because he's just so good.
Yeah, I mean, you really – I'd like to I used to say this all the time. I want that other team at their best.
Sure. No doubt about it.
I don't want any excuses. You know, it's like you. I'm going to challenge you when you're at your best. I want me to be at my best, and let's see what happens.
No question. Let me ask you this: now, football, are you Redskins or Ravens?
The team in Washington.
Oh, I'm sorry, Commanders. I apologize, buddy.
Oh, that's okay. No, that's all right. The team in. I used to do a joke about them putting a different symbol on their helmet. Just change the symbol to a potato, and just. The Redskin potatoes, but that's they
the russets
that was a big deal in my house because my dad was a coach. of Little League football. My friends were playing football. Football was everywhere. I'm 8 years old, and it's like my mom dressed me up for a winter's day. I had so much gear on. I couldn't even walk. You know, you're just kind of rotating from one cleat to the other, and you're learning the game. And I played that game. I loved that game. I was a very physical kid. I was, I think, probably 190 pounds when I was a senior. I played fullback, like backup fullback and middle linebacker, because I'm stocky. But I could also bench press almost 400 pounds. Yikes. And I could run the 40 in 4.8. You know, wow. Yeah, that was a lot of power and speed. And you tell me I can put 50, 60 pounds of equipment on and knock the shit out of somebody? Yes, sign me up. Where do I sign up?
Football is a fun game, I have to say. I love it too. I'm not.
Yeah, it's, you know, my wife likens it to kind of a sickness. So,
Well, you were probably Colts back then. Colts were pretty good back then.
Oh, man. We were Washington fans, but the weirdest thing in the world, Dobie, happened on our TV. We had a UHF that would pick up Packers games.
Okay. Yeah.
So back in the day, I'm growing up, and I got to see Washington. I got to see Green Bay. I'm just like, wow, this is the best thing in the world. But my dad loved Lombardi. I'm not talking about – he didn't like him. He loved Vince.
He came to Washington. He finished up there.
Yeah. I mean, he passed away, and it was sad the way he went. But he actually was really ready to reorganize that whole team. You know?
Oh, he would have too. He had a winning season, and he had Sonny Jurgensen. He always said, no offense to Bart Starr, but Sonny Jurgensen is the best passer. And then he went to the team and he had him. Redesigned the uniforms. They look like the Packers with the yellow helmets.
It was awesome. I love that.
With the R on the side.
Oh, my God. We loved it. We absolutely loved it. My dad loved it. He thought it was great. But now it's like, you know, Snyder, I can't stand that man. And the issue too, Toby, is there was a survey about 5 years ago in Europe and here, who is the worst sports team owner in the world?
Mm-hmm.
You know who won?
Let's see here. Saddam Hussein.
Well, close.
Snyder.
Snyder was worse than him.
Yeah. I mean, but his likability factor is on high. I think Donald Sterling, the basketball guy, was up there too. He was
same thing. Same. Yeah, that kind of inappropriateness, just uncooperative guy who, you know, he comes in and he thinks he sees football the way football's supposed to be. He doesn't know what he's talking about. He doesn't know what he's doing. You know,
who bought the team? I know they got sold.
The guy who owns the Philadelphia 76ers, and he also owns a hockey team. Okay. He's a really good sports guy. And he wanted a football team. He couldn't get the Eagles. He was kind of looking around, and it's him and Magic Johnson.
Oh, okay.
Which, do you think I'm going to be upset about Magic Johnson coming to Commanders games?
Yeah, no, I get you. No, that's good. That's good. No. I just knew they got sold. I wasn't aware of who bought them.
Oh, yeah. I can't remember his name, but it's now today. Finally gone completely official. They ratified it. All the owners signed off on it. It's a done deal. Bye, Danny. Bye. Bye. Well, take your short man's complex and go back to Britain. That's where he lives. He lives in Great Britain now.
Because no one will have him here.
No one likes him here. They know who he is.
Yeah. But he's a billionaire, you know?
Oh, God, yeah. He doesn't have a word. Let me ask you this. If you were offered a gig today that paid reasonably what we were used to getting back into, would you do it?
No, I still do some. I did cruise ships for a while, which is absolutely floating hell on earth.
That's what I
wouldn't wish it on my word. And you know, some people like it. It sounds good in theory. So does communism. Looks good on paper. I didn't enjoy it. A lot of comedians do. And it's, you know, I don't know about you, but I mean, like I say, you have a relationship stuff and being on the road all the time. Sports has an off season. Comedy. Yeah. You're out 52.
Yeah.
And it's just like, you know, got a nice relationship now and things are good. My brother had a stroke. He was in a nursing home. He passed away last year too, my older brother.
Oh, man.
I wanted to be close. That's okay. He was great, like your brother, you know?
Yeah.
And
I
wanted to be around him to see him. So my sister and I, we went to see him, you know, at least once a week if we could. And it's just that I know we did the job and he passed away. And it's just, now I'm free to do whatever I want to. I don't have the desire to do it. You know, age kicks in and it's like, yeah, it was fun, but I want to do something that's more fulfilling. I know that sounds.
No, recent, there's but... nothing, Toby, there's nothing at all wrong with that. This right here, what I'm doing here, yeah, is a very new thing to this format. They have some wonderful storytelling hours that they do with a group that tells stories. They do jazz. John does the Labor Beat show. He's very big. He was a labor a union organizer. And then he got out of that and got into coding. He worked a long time with Microsoft and, you know, he did his thing. He's retired. And he became the DJ at the school, at the college. You know, he was there. He is. We're talking about him right now. And he invited me, excuse me, he didn't know who I was. And he invited me to be on a lot of different shows. And we just hit it off right away. I mean, we were just like, he would tell me, he would say, hey, listen, this is radio. Stop being so damn loud.
I'll turn the speakers down. It's a big daddy. That's funny.
But we're close to finishing up, aren't we, John?
See here, I'll get my microphone on again.
Okay, handsome man.
If you want to get the tranquilizer dart.
If we want to go to the 30-minute limit, I think people that listen to podcasts over 30 minutes probably should be doing something else. You should be doing something else. They got idle hands.
Intoxicated, incarcerated.
The Devil's Workshop.
Sure.
Would you mind if I plugged a book?
No, not at all. Please do.
Real quick, it's called Monkey in the Middle. It's a true story. I haven't talked in a while, Mike. It's my best friend since childhood. Everyone has a best friend, boys or girls. He robbed a bank that he used to work at. He was head of security. He decided he wanted to rob the bank. And not only once, but twice. The second time, he had a gorilla mask, a tuxedo, and helium balloons. The story's Monkey in the Middle. I had to testify in federal court against my best friend. And I had to put him in prison. And it's great. There's funny parts in it. There's not funny parts in it. Yeah. It's 380 pages. I wrote every word myself. If you don't like it, I'll buy it back.
Movie. Dude, I'm there. I'm buying it.
I'll send you one.
No, it's one of those things where don't you do that. My wife and I will pay for it like everybody else.
What's the title?
It's called Monkey in the Middle, and it's Eckhart's Press. Eckhart.
Love it. Press. Love it.
And I know they're gonna make before COVID I was out in Hollywood trying to get it sold into a movie, and they always change the book from the movie. So I know a couple of Wayans brothers and Caitlyn Jenner will be in the movie and a duck. It'll be nothing like the real story. So I'm prepared for that going in. But it's a heck of a story. And my publisher said, he said, you know what, women tend to buy books more than men, but your story is compelling. It's the bank robbery is the fluff, but it's your best friend putting you in that situation where you gotta testify. And that's what happened. So
that hurts.
But thanks for letting me plug it. That's it.
Oh, no problem. Okay. Hey, man, one more thing too, John. I'm gonna run a little bit longer, but I also want to talk about real quick, and I wanna let Dobie talk about this. I'll bring it up and then shut my mouth. The Maxwell method. How did you come up with that Facebook?
Well, I'll tell you, Mike, Colonel Sanders didn't invent fried chicken, but he was smart enough to put his face and his name on the bucket. I made every mistake there was to make on stage and off as a comedian. And I thought, you know what? Not a lot of people helped me when I started. So if I can mentor young comedians, I will do that. And also the best carpenter to learn from, he's got the least amount of fingers. He sawed them off, Jack. How did you throw those three off? And I basically tell, this is what not to do. This is how to do it. I love to mentor like a little league coach.
Oh, yeah.
Frank Caliendo, he opened for me the very first time he was on stage. There's a bunch of people like a guy named Tom Clark. So I would say I've taught more than 3,000 people, and maybe 30 have become full-time comedians because it's really hard. But I think just because somebody picks up a guitar and doesn't end up in Van Halen, it doesn't mean you're a failure. Right. So I have a Facebook group, the Maxwell Method of Stand-Up Comedy. I've got more than 5,000 members worldwide. Great. If anybody would like to join, it's totally free. I don't charge anything, and it's fun.
We love it. And we love you, Dobie, and we're going to miss you, but thank you so much for coming on today. John, I want to say thanks for being the grand poobah here at enlightenradio.org. Thanks for joining and tuning in to the Sports Attack and the Sports and Comedy Attack. My name is Michael Cucarini. I appreciate you coming. Thank you. Good day to everyone. Much love everywhere.
All right. Take care. But everything comes next.
Recording stopped.